For the fans, by the fans, welcome to the Non-League Couple Show. I am once again Tim Buell, leading a motley crew of Non-League's finest for a celebration of all things on the good ship Grassroots. First mate in that crew, as ever, is a salty sea dog with experience, charm and a sharp tongue for those who step out of line. Former manager at AFC Wimbledon, Hendon, Northwood, Harrowborough and everywhere else in the world, Mr. Dave Anderson. Good evening, Dave.
Good evening, Tim. How are you?
It's been a long week already, and there's still more to come. Back to join him as our co-presenter is presenter at FC United Radio, but perhaps better task on this ship's crew as our vegan chef. It's Swampy. Good evening, Swampy.
Yeah, good evening, guys.
I've seen some impressive foodie creations on social media this week.
I've got a restaurant evening tomorrow night with my father, who's from Iran. So I thought, let's do a Persian night. I'm expecting maybe, you know, 10 or 15 people to turn up. But we've got 74 bookings for Friday now, and we've got about 60 for Saturday. So luckily, FC aren't playing until Sunday. So it means I can spend a whole day in the kitchen. So, yes, from football to kitchen duties, it's... As you say, it's been a long, long week.
A man of many talents. Talking of many talents, there's been more managerial moves this week. Mickey Moore, former number two to Paul Cox, has been handed a full-time job at Barrow. He's been interim there with one win, three draws, two defeats, but now got a two-year deal there. Steve Thompson, formerly manager at Yeovil Town and Truro City, he's taken over the reins at Dorchester Town. And Swampy, I think you've...
John Macken, the ex Preston North End, a Manchester City Crystal Palace player, has taken over the reins in his first managerial job at Radcliffe Borough in the Evo Stick Northern Premier First Division North. So a good coup for them. Only 40 years of age. I think he's hung up his boots now, but it's going to be a good challenge for him. Look forward to seeing him and interviewing in the next couple of weeks.
Another nice example of people wanting to learn the managerial reins the right way round. And one of those that did exactly the same, he's taken the biggest job of the week that was on offer. A man no stranger to non-league. He stepped back into a number one role up at Chester FC in the last couple of days. They're in the National League relegation drop zone with only one win in 11. But old friend of the show, Marcus Bigno, thinks he is the man to save them and take them forward. Good evening, Marcus.
Good evening.
So, one win in 11. Are you hopeful that you're, by the other side of Christmas you'll be in a better position?
Yes, that's the plan. And obviously the right here, right now, is to get results and going in the right direction. So like you said, come the turn of the new year, we're in a far more healthier position.
And obviously the table, we discussed the table last season. There's already 4 points adrift from safety, so you need to sort of make some changes quickly. Is your first move to get inside the players' heads and get as much out of them as possible?
Yeah, of course. You know, the remit and looking at the group, I've looked back at all their games now. For me now is putting some structure to them, some organisation, both on and off the ball, and giving them some roles and responsibilities and with some hard work and working harder but smarter. If they've got that desire, I'm sure we'll be going in the right direction.
Swampy, question.
Yeah, Marcus, first of all, congratulations to the appointment. I mean, one thing it's fair to say, there was a number of quite high-profile managers in the frame for it. I think Ronnie Moore, Richard Muddy, Kevin Davis even. And you've got to be pleased that, you know, you've come out on top of all sort of those kind of managers to take the role on. The question is for me, obviously, you've had a great success at Solihull Moors. And got them to the highest position ever. And listening to the way you talk about football, you firmly believe that it wasn't just a football team you were managing at Solihull. You were allowed to actually build the club. Yeah. Chester, you got that opportunity again. I heard you saying you wanted it to be a love affair with Chester. And do you think you're hopefully going to get the opportunity to do so? Because you didn't really get that opportunity at Grimsby, did you, after 5 months, keeping them up but being let go?
Yeah, no, you know, I think my record speaks for itself in terms of results, and I include Grimsby in that. You know, the manager who I've taken over, Paul Hurst, has done a great job and got headhunted from a League One club, and we still managed to maintain the same points per average per game, even though we lost Omar Bogle, that made the club a lot of money, and people tend to forget as well, we lost Dean Henderson, who for me is going to go on to some great things, and, you know, no coincidence, Paul Hurst has took him to Shrewsbury, and look where they are in the league. So we've always felt we could get results, and that's what we've got to do at Chester right away. But given time, you know, like I said, I think my record speaks for itself, and in terms of building not just a football team, but a football club and an infrastructure for those football clubs to be successful.
Well, with the CEO, I know his plan going back a season and a half ago was to take the team and the players from a 44-week contract to a 52-week contract, from 2 days to 3 days to 4 days to 5 days. How near are you to that now? And was that an influence in your coming to Chester?
Yeah, of course, because like you've just said, you can see now there's sensible management of the football club off the pitch in terms of being realistic and in terms of not trying to get there too quickly. And there's a for me, what Chester, especially now with the new CEO, for me now there's a vision followed by an action. Whereas before it's probably actions with no vision. And as you, a clear indication in terms of how he wants to turn the club from a part-time club into a full-time club. And yeah, for me that excites me because I want to work in the full-time game. I want to be given the opportunity to be successful. And we feel we've got that platform and we're going in the right direction.
Hi, Marcus. It's Dave Anderson. I'm interested in, you know, I'm always interested in managers when they go into new clubs. I haven't done it myself too many times, but I when you look at 1-11 and you go in, and obviously as a new manager, you're always going to lift the dressing room, no matter why you turn out to be successful or not. But in your own head, Marcus, do you have a set amount of games you go, look, this group of players will have 4 games, 6 games to before I start moving outside of it? Or already, do you know what you're sort of looking at away from the club?
Well, for me, looking at the group, there's a lot of good senior players there with a lot of experience at this level. Now, the position we find ourselves in is obviously that experience and that ability within the squad isn't transferring over to points on the board and a position in the league. So it's really getting inside this group and seeing where it's got, you know, where it's gone wrong up to now. And, you know, I was very keen on speaking to John McCarthy this morning and just asked him the question, you know, if he had his time again, what would he do different? So he can give you a different insight. But for me personally, I honestly think, you know, the remit right here, right now is I honestly believe I can bring some structure to the group. I just thought they were lacking a little bit of structure. Some organisation on and off the ball and giving them some key roles and responsibilities. And with that platform and that base, if they're prepared to work hard and having that, like I said, the phrase, work harder but smarter, I really think this group can turn their fortunes around. So I'm a great believer in this group. And if they take on board what we're trying to do in training, then great. So in terms of you saying how many games, it's what I see in training being implemented into a game, and if I can see the signs are there that they're implementing it, I'll be more than patient with this group because I honestly believe results will turn around. But obviously there will come a time, if that's not the case, you're going to have to look elsewhere. But I want to give this group more than an opportunity to go and go and show what they're capable of doing.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, wise words. Just a little the follow-up to it. I mean, listen, everyone understands more. It's a big football club, Chester. You know, does that make it a more difficult job? You know, because you're not going to play in front of a couple of hundred every week, are you? Big crowds, expectancy. Does that make the task harder, or is part of the job getting them on board with the vision?
Yeah, it's like you said, I think you've used a key word there, vision and supporters understanding where the club are going. And like I said, that vision followed by an action can be successful. You look at Grimsby, which, you know, bigger crowds, bigger expectation. But for me, my experience at Grimsby can only put me in good stead here. We had a club who took 6 years to get out of, you know, the National League. And probably supporters wanted League One football too early, too quickly. So I honestly believe at this football club, the level expectancy from the supporters is realistic. But as managers, as coaches, as supporters, as players, we've still got to have that ambition to want to achieve and dream. You know, we want to return to the Football League. Of course we do. That's what we're going to work for every day. But there's a process to get there. And I think it's got to be a realistic process. And I also believe the people working at the football club with the supporters are realistic in those goals.
Swampy.
Just going back to Grimsby for a moment. You've just written an article, haven't you, in regards to sports science, conditioning, nutrition, and psychology, and talking about how the women's game, because obviously you know you were very successful with Birmingham City's ladies as well. About how the semi-professional game, and even in your opinion, with the short time you had at Grimsby, the professional game is lacking so much behind the women's game in so many of these different, ologies and nutrition and so on and so forth. You want to elaborate on that a little bit more? Because it was an interesting article. So I was just keen to get you further ideas from you.
Yeah, I mean, the way the FA and the WSL now is set up, you've got to apply for your licence. So you could get promotion, but if your licence doesn't come up to the standards required, you won't get accepted into the league. And that is the whole structure, full-time doctor, sports scientists, etc., etc. So there's real tight guidelines and in terms of football clubs being successful in the women's game. Now, coming from that background, because we got so much success at Birmingham, I mean, we were a Parks pitch team, to be honest, when I first took over, to going all the way to the Champions League semi-final. But within that, we had to fall in line with the Super League and the FA and the stipulations they put in terms of getting a licence so you're able to compete at the very highest level. Now, a lot, and I know it's about resources, and my point about Grimsby, I understood Grimsby put, they were so desperate to get back into the Football League, and rightly, in my opinion as well, the board put everything into the first team budget. Once we got into the Football League, for me, it was about now, how do we build that infrastructure to have that sustainability in the Football League? So you do go back to your sports scientists, your analysis, etc., etc. Because ultimately now these players are becoming athletes. We had Omar Bogle, who was a prize asset for us, who could make us a lot of money. Now, we had no sports scientists to make him the fittest, the fastest, the strongest he could be. We had no analysis in there in terms of him looking back at his game, and we could do individual clipping. So it's about a support staff, what just makes these players, we get the best out of them physically, mentally, technically and tactically. And that becomes with a support structure. And that's what was missing. But I'm glad to see now Grimsby are now starting to implement that support staff, because ultimately it's trying to get the best, finding those 1% in all those players to make them perform on a Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. And you'll be implementing that. I know you implemented that within Solihull, and also you'll be doing that now at Chester as well.
Yeah, you know, Chester already coming into the building. They've got a psychiatrist, they've got a nutritionist, they've got sports science. So the support staff's there. So I'm really excited to bring all those elements of the staff together and look how we can involve it and improve it for the benefit of the players.
Excellent.
I was just going to say the same. Marcus, I think it's an excellent insight for, there'll be people, well, hopefully there's people listening to this from lower levels who, they will listen. They will listen and take note of it. It shows you, for those on the outside, how much a football club has changed, and the dimensions within the dressing room have changed, and it's real insight. I just want to finish by wishing you all the best, mate. I should have done that at the top of the interview, but all the very best.
No, thank you. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Home game on Saturday, then, Marcus. You've got Maidenhead visiting. You know, I've heard. I think some of the other fans in the National League were sort of dismissing Maidenhead as being a small side, but we all know about Alan Devonshire and the side that he's put together there. They're fifth in the table as well. How have you gone about approaching this one already? Have you been able to get some scouting videos or some information about them, or is it just literally you're going in, set your own side up and see how the game develops?
Yeah, for me, in terms of the group of players, it's all been about us on the training pitch, and I think that's really important now that we focus on the group and the attention to that. But in terms of myself and the staff, we've certainly watched Maidenhead. We all know about them. So the boys will be prepared. So like you said, yes, going and watching them. We're fortunate enough now, games can be, you know, videos and you can access it. We'll be prepared. But ultimately, the focus for our boys this week will be all about us and what we do. And that's got to be where we, you know, in terms of our attitude going into the game.
Well, thank you very much for your time again, and wish you best of luck in the new venture. And hopefully, we'll speak to you later on in the season with some better news if you climb up the table.
Yeah, that's the plan.
best of luck. Speak soon. Take care.
Thank you, guys. Cheers.
Yeah.
As you said, Dave, some real. Great and different insight about how football's changed. You know, I've learned so much in recent years how football's changed behind the scenes. It's not about necessarily the football now. It's about other things that you can get going on in your football club and the community. But yeah, Marcus is, you know, there talking about, well, another set of bodies. I mean, if every non-league club had 10 people behind the scenes to do anything, I think they'd be pleased. But it shows how that's the way you get a little bit extra out of everybody, isn't it?
Well, he used the phrase one percent, and that is, it's if you can move yourself on 1% as a football club, and then a little bit here, and it all adds up. I mean, I think the big thing, it's one thing to have 10 people on your staff. But you have to absolutely have it where everyone knows their position. All the players in the squad know what the guys are there to do. And you give them enough time to affect what their job is. Because in old school, I remember going back when there was a manager and you might have had an assistant and sometimes you didn't. Then it became a two-man job. And then when I left it sort of 2 or 3 years ago, it was a three-man job. And coaching wise, plus there was a physio, you know, and now to bring in the sports scientists and the fitness guys, you have to do that. You know, any little advantage you can gain, and if you've got the finances to bring these people in, as long as you can structure it right, and Marcus absolutely sounds as if he knows what he's doing with that, and so that it doesn't become a confused signal, and it's a fog, for want of a better description. If there's clarity within all these different components, then it will help you.
I was just going to say it's from a nutritional perspective, you know, you look at clubs like Forest Green where they've got the entire team on vegan diets during the week. You've got clubs like ours who have a nutritionist, and that's to stop them all going to McDonald's or Burger King or any of these establishments on the way to games and on the way back from games. I think that's. But you know, the game's ever evolving as that 1%, as you rightly say, and the game being so quick, much quicker now than it ever has been. These players are having to be dealt with like thoroughbred racehorses to a certain degree, and making sure that everything is in place. But it still means that you can still go out and play on a Saturday and a Sunday in the lower leagues and enjoy your football without having to deal with all that. But the higher you go up, the harder it becomes.
Well, let's think about some clubs a bit further down again. You're listening to the Non-League Football Show. Joining the debate on Twitter at Non-League Show. Coming up, FA VARs. Okay, so away from the league, further down the pyramid, it's FA Vars weekend for many clubs at steps 5, 6 and 7. There's 170 ties this weekend for the second qualifying round. Joining us on the line, one manager preparing his side for Saturday with a trip to Godalming Town is Rottenhurst Town gaffer Pat McManus. Pat, good evening.
Hi Tim, how are you?
Yeah, good. I know you were disappointed to get knocked out in the FA Cup a few weeks back, but the FA Vars, how important is that to your season?
It's very important, Tim. Obviously, it's another revenue stream for the club. It's probably the only revenue stream left for us. So, yeah, it's massive for us.
You mentioned revenue streams. In true non-league style, there's even monies for the losing sides this season. So I think 250 quid this round for the losers, but I'm sure you're probably more interested in the 725 for winning to add that to the 550 for the last round. That's probably already been spent by the chairman, but a big important boost for the club financially.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. There's plenty around here that we can spend that on, to be fair. There's the bills come in left, right and centre at this level. So, it would be a welcome boost if we can manage to get a win up there. So, we'll be doing what we can to make sure that's the case.
Question, Dave.
Yeah, no, I'm always interested, Pat, when you go into a game like this. Obviously, we've just spoke to Marcus Pignett at Chester, who was talking about sports scientists and special fitness coaches and stuff at that level. And we come down to where you are, and you're going into a big tie. Will you have had a scouting report done on Godalming, or is it just one of them you sort yourself out and go there and see what they have to offer?
Yeah, well, I went up there last week to watch them, and that's what we've done tonight. We haven't trained tonight. We've done effectively an information session as opposed to training, so we didn't get any injuries ahead of Saturday. So we've just finished now. We've had 45 minutes going through a bit about them and what we're going to do on Saturday, and now we're going to go out and watch our under-18s in the FA Youth Cup against AFC Totten.
Excellent. And when you sit the lads down and you do a night like tonight, and I've done them myself many times, and I'm always aware of all of a sudden that makes it bigger than a league game, because you don't have the finances, or you as a manager can't get to see every opponent. So when you sit them down and you go through Saturday, does it take on a different feel? The lads get a little bit more excited about it?
I think so. I think the whole Saturday will be a different day anyway, Dave, because we've got a coach going up. We've got it was the first 30 supporters that put their name on the clubhouse wall got subsidised travel on the players' coach as well. So there'll be 30
Excellent.
Supporters coming up with us. So the whole day will have a different feel about it. So win, lose or draw, it'll be a different day. But obviously we're going there, and we're going up there confident. So it'll be a different day anyway.
You mentioned the FA Youth Cup there. You off to watch that later, or as soon as you're done with us, I guess. But I mean, how important is youth to a club like yours? Are there still gems that exist at this level that could unearth and springboard to the next level?
Oh, definitely, Tim. To be honest with you, it was a 16-year-old lad who came on in extra time in the previous round. That got the winner. That got us through to the second qualifying round. A lad called Leon Borges.
Watch all those scouts noting down that name now. Yeah,
yeah.
You should have kept that one quiet.
He's just left school. So he came on. He scored in the last minute of extra time.
Well, that's something that he can tell his family when he grows up.
Well, funny enough, he's just been based on that, and we the Echo did a little piece about him, and he's just been invited down to AFC Bournemouth for some sessions, actually. So, he's good. We give the young lads a chance here, and they do get noticed. I've just heard over the tannoy there that Noel McCarthy Gardner scored. He's 17 years old, and we brought him into the first team squad last year at the same age. He was he was 16, just left school, and we brought him in, and we gave him his debut when he was 16 years old. So yeah, they get a chance here if they're good enough. So
yeah, I mean, we've spoken about the managerial merry-go-round again this evening. You know, but you've been at Brock for quite a while now, haven't you? Is it because you've got that link all the way through the club? Do you think that's helped to sort of keep you stable and you know, move the club on throughout the seasons that you've been there?
Well, to be honest with you, when I first came here, Tim, you know, we didn't have a development team. We didn't have an under-18s. It's something that's been introduced over the last 2 years, and we're sort of bearing the fruit of it, really, within the first team setup as well. So it's something that we've introduced over the last two seasons. So yeah, long may that continue. Whether it keeps me in a job for longer, I don't know. I suppose results will do that.
Just think of all those midweeks and Saturdays that you could have off, eh?
I don't know. I'll have to get a few more. I'll have to find a few more restaurant recommendations to fill my time, I suppose.
FA Vars this weekend, but how are things going in the league? You're in the Wessex League. It's quite a competitive league, and a difficult. We've already been spoken about Step 5 and the difficulties of Step 5. How do you set your targets at the start of the season? Is it always with one eye on promotion, or is it just to help solidify the club and their status?
It's a tough league, Tim. Certainly this season, I'd say there's probably, out of a league of 22, there's probably 12 teams with a realistic expectation of finishing in the top eight. Blackfield and Langley are sort of they're unbeaten in with 8 wins from 8. We're 5 wins from 8, and we're 8. So it's really tight. So I think even at this stage of the season, there's 4 teams that are unbeaten. So it's a tight league. There's a lot of money flying around in it, and we're not the ones that are they're spending anything. So it's tough. You know, if we can finish somewhere, you know, between us in the top 8 and the top 10, we're punching massively above our weight, really. So anything like that would be great. So,
well, wish you well at the weekend in the FA Vars and for the rest of the season as well. And we'll try and keep an eye on how things are going and that. But we'll let you go and watch that FA Youth Cup and what's the future of Brockenhurst Town coming on.
Lovely. Thanks very much, Tim.
Take care.
Yeah, good luck.
Chaps, FA Vars, standout tie probably from this second qualifying round is AFC Liverpool against City of Liverpool, the two fan clubs, you know, one formed in 2008, one in 2015. I think there's been a bit of nastiness, a bit of fan banter, I think they call it, on social, and both clubs are trying to play it down. So it's nice that passions rise high at Step 5, but sometimes it can get a little bit out of hand. Swampy.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's a good point, Case, there, that the two teams that have been playing against each other. It's interesting that City of Liverpool, they play in purple because it's an amalgamation. If you blend red, the red of Liverpool and the blue of Everton, it makes purple. So they're a club that's striving to go as far as they can as well. And they're a very principled football club, very similar to sort of a Sam Powley model. They're a fan-owned football club, as AFC Liverpool are, and ourselves. But I mean, FA Vars, it is an interesting stat, actually. The FA Vars winners last season and the FA Trophy winners last season, South Shields and York, they're actually going to be playing against each other in the FA Cup in the next round. I think it's the first time that the two winners of the competition are going to meet in the next round of the Cup. So, and it'll be an absolute cracking game. South Shields last week beating Darlington at Darlington by 3-1. But it was nice to hear Pat talking about youthful players and giving them a chance and giving them an opportunity. And I think sometimes managers don't like to risk it. And I think sometimes supporters do like the fact that a youngster comes through, maybe 16 or 17, and they get that chance and they can show their quality. And, you know, they put them in the shop window, really, for them. As you say, he's going down to AFC Bournemouth, you know, which can only benefit the football club and benefit the young lad as well. So may it long continue.
To be first one, but I couldn't agree more. But my theory is that not so many young players get put into first teams now because managers aren't allowed to have a bad fortnight or they're out of a job. And I would always, in the early part of my career, I never thought twice about putting young players in the sides. But now, realistically, if you're in a management job now, unless you're at one of the clubs who we've spoken about who have had sustained success and had a manager there for a length of time where he can do that, we've seen managers get sacked. Well, we've talked about the merry-go-round now. The merry-go-round we're talking about now in September, we used to talk about that at Christmas. You know? So I absolutely agree with you. And that my theory is that while managers are hired and fired like they are nowadays, less young players will get a chance.
Yeah, well, I think you're probably right there. Just very quickly, Dave, let me ask you a question as a footballing man and an ex-manager. What Pat was saying there, that obviously they've been out to see the opposition. They give the guys a night off tonight. They've had a chat about the opposition. Would it ever be a time where you would take the entire team to watch the opposition? You know, as a manager, you know, thinking outside the box, rather than just a scout and yourself going. I mean, Jim Gannon was watching us on Tuesday night because we had a replay and we won that and we get to play them in the next round of the FA Cup. But it'd be interesting to see if a manager's ever taken an entire team to watch the opposition to give him a real heads up.
It's something I've never done. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. There's a few reasons you wouldn't do it. One, the lads would be bored to tears because they hate watching football and love playing it. Two, it was hard enough to get the club to pay for your two tickets instead of buying 20 tickets. But in all seriousness, I wanted to either for myself to see them or a scout or one of my staff to see them. So we could work on the stuff we wanted to work on, because if you take the whole squad to watch a team and to play like Real Madrid, straight away, they're on the back foot. So in games, especially in big games and big cup games where you may be playing a side from a division above, I would like to have all the information and my staff to have it, and then we would feed the players what we wanted them to have. Whereas if you take them all to see the game, you don't get that option, you know. That would be my serious answer, you know.
Yeah. Well, actually, that, just thinking about it, that could be that's the end of Swampy's stupid question for this week. Next week, I'll be asking another stupid question.
Well, first, Dave will
answer professionally.
It's not the stupidest question you've asked me, believe me.
Wait, I'll need to find some extra theme music now for that one, Swampy. I'll let. Now, we all love a strange but true story in non-league. There are the sort of things you just don't get on Match of the Day. So this week, we were intrigued and then charmed by a tweet from Jarrow Rufin in the 31st minute that reported Captain Daryl Donnelly being subbed in order to make a mercy dash to the hospital. Not an injury for a crunching tackle, and thankfully no horror tale of a sick family member, but instead a heartwarming tale of a new dad stepping up to the plate. And joining us on the line is Mr. Jarrow Rufin himself, Richie McLaughlin, his joint manager, but he can tell us the tale about Jarrow Rufin. Richie, good evening.
Good evening.
So, 31st minute, and we saw the tweet that Daryl was pulled off. I mean, how did that all come about? Did you get a call to the ground? Did you make signals to Daryl?
Yeah, well, his dad was on standby, to be honest with you, because we knew that somebody had been having a baby at any time. And Daryl knew that the team was a little bit short, so he decided to turn out, but said he would get to the hospital as soon as. And then we got a call, so we had to make a substitution, ASAP, and get him away. So he was dashing around the ground, running around, hide his kit off, and away he went.
Oh, I had visions that he kept his kit on and rushed, dived through the hospital doors.
That's correct.
Wait, You should have grabbed the CCTV footage as he turned up at the hospital. So, mum, baby, dad, everybody's doing well, are they?
Yeah, they're doing great at the moment. Everything's fine. So he's happy. Well, he's been to train tonight, so everything must be fine.
He hasn't got quite into that routine yet, has he? He's probably, he's still getting his sleep at the moment.
At the moment, like, but it'll dawn on him shortly, I think. Like, it does on all of us. He's been there tonight, he's done a good training session, and now he's dashing back home to keep the peace.
So do you make Jarrow Roofing Club shirts that small?
We can do, actually. Like, yeah, I think so, because we have got some supporters from humans there, so I'm sure we can get one for the suit.
And you said the boys have been in for training and that. You've got we've just spoken FA Vars to Pat McManus at Brockenhurst Town down in the south, but
yeah,
he was saying what a big game it is for his club. You've got is it Knaresborough Town? I think you're on Saturday. I mean, how big is it for a club like yours?
I think it's great because we've been in this competition as a semi final. And we just got beat, we just got pipped. But apart from that, it was brilliant even getting to the semi-final. It was excellent. Everybody looks forward to sort of these games. And if you can get through, it's just brilliant for the club as well. But also, I like to travel away. So if you get a game away, I like to have a bit of laugh with the lads on the bus, a bit carry on. So it bonds you all together, you know. It's just good all round.
Dave Anson, question.
No, I was going to go back as an ex-manager, I'd always be worried about my players being focused and being in the right frame of mind to play. Mm-hmm. And I have on a couple of occasions had a phone in the dugout for the same sort of reason. But how did Darrell play in the 31 minutes that he played with that on his mind?
Well, he done all right, to be honest with you. We're doing quite well. We're doing well. He went off, to be honest with you. And then the game changed because obviously we were down on numbers. Well, I think when he had 12 men, but obviously he had to go, so we just had to get on with it. But apart from that, over the 31 minutes, he had kept the team together and everything was looking quite good on that phone call, and suddenly it changed.
Yeah, it's not something you hear every day, Tim, is it?
It's certainly not. Swimpy, you got a question as well.
Yeah, Richie, good evening.
Hiya.
We've just been talking to Marcus Bidnott, who's taken on the job at Chester, talking about nutritionists, talking about sports psychology and a host of other things. Now, I've been up to your ground on many occasions because Andy Hudson, your vice chairman, communication and media manager and goalkeeping coach, is my cousin. So not only...
Oh, right.
So not only does he have several jobs within the club, yourself, I mean, obviously you built the club. Back in 1987, you became the main sponsor. You're the manager, the chairman, treasurer, groundsman of the club. I know you, when things need rebuilding, you're there building away again. I mean, it's just poles apart, isn't it? Even though, you know, it's three steps from league-wise from where Chester are, and Chester have the facilities of all these other things. You've been at the club for nearly 30 years now. What motivates you still to... I mean, I know the answer to it myself because I've met you. But, I mean, tell the listener, what motivates you as a human being to get out there week in, week out, just to enjoy the football of Jarrow Roofing?
Yeah, I think it's just in your system. It's been in my blood all my life. And even now, I've still got the same feeling for it. You know, I still go there. Even tonight, I don't have to be at training now if I don't want to be, but I'm always there. I still like to be there and see what's going on. Really, I should be chilling out a little bit, but I think them days of chilling out, I wouldn't be saying any of that. Any chance?
on a footballing side, I mean, you're currently mid-table. You finished mid-table last season. South Shields going on, obviously, to win it. And within your division, within the northeast of England, there is a great tradition in the FA. FA Vars, I think several teams within your division have got on to win it. So how important is it, A, that you progress as much as you can this season in the league with the likes of South Shields sort of like out the way now and probably never to come back into Northern League football again? How important is it for Jarrow to kick on?
Oh, I think it's great. The competition, I love the competition itself, to be honest with you, because you meet different people, you meet good committees, and it's great for to just travel about. But apart from that, I think it's good for the club. the club get publicity out of it, they get finance out of it. So everything about the FA Vars at our level is brilliant, and I just hope it goes on and on forever.
Excellent, excellent.
Brilliant stuff. Well, thank you very much for joining us. Send out a love to Daryl and Lila and the team. And best of luck at the weekend. And we'll keep an eye out for the result.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Good luck.
Brilliant. Thank you. Thanks very much. Thank you. Bye bye now.
Take care. Bye bye.
Take care, Richie. Up the roofing.
Now, chap, do you remember that those? I think we had a couple of lads a couple of seasons ago who skipped at half time to make a Justin Bieber concert. Remember they had a lot of stick had to sing a song, didn't they?
That's
the forfeit.
That's a disgrace.
Is your daughter being born? Is that acceptable?
I think that's being acceptable. I think the other two lads should have GM for the music. But that's me.
Yeah, you're right.
I just think, and again, we talk about, the level of football that you're at, and that it's difficult, if this is top level, if Darrell Donnelly's playing at Chester or in the Football League, I still think he should, he wouldn't have had the chance to play because we'd have withdrawn him out of the team.
Yeah,
we might have said, look, come along and watch if you want, but you won't be starting the game. But it shows you the level. And talking about the different, we all get to love it in a different way, don't we? Because of the level that you're at. But that's a very understanding wife, and someone that has a real love of his football and his football club. So good luck to them all.
You've never used an excuse like that before, Dave. Football doesn't always come first, then, no?
No, listen. You know me. When I was in there, football always came first. But I think you also have to have an understanding family around you to make sure that everyone's happy about it. But it's a great, great story. Only in non-league. That's what I would say. Only in non-league.
Well, I mean, I think you're right, Dave. I mean, I've come from my father being a professional football scout, an ex-footballer. I think it's understanding families, you get very used to it. It's just part and parcel of the makeup and family life. And if dad's not there Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Saturday, it's because it's football, and you just get very, very used to that. And then you take on that mantle. And I'm out all the time. My partner's very understanding. I do 2-3 games a week, and the commentary and so on and so forth. But I mean, listen to Richie and the lads at Jarrah. I mean, the North East, any game you go to in the North East, and I suppose anywhere else, but for me in particular, the North East, it's just got such a wealth of characters. It's got such a wealth of knowledge up there. And, it's no surprise that these teams have been winning the FA Trophy for years and years and years. And, they're all graft, they all work. I mean, South Shields, have gone up this season, and when they've got the likes of Julia Archer playing for them, ex Premier League footballer, and we saw them at Wembley earlier in the season, how good they were. And you see, they're actually based in Jarrah, South Shields, and Jarrah are actually based in Bolden, which is just basically, it's 5 minutes away. And everyone is supporting South Shields because, they've got a lot of glory and they've done very, very well. For the likes of Jarrah and other clubs like North Shield as well, and other clubs, it's tough out there. But you can hear it in his voice. You can hear it in your voice when you hear you talking about football. It's in there. And he's, Rich, you'll probably be there for another 30 years. Pretty recently on the ground another 3 or 4 times, and he's been there 30 years already. But it's great. It's great stories. I like the fact that he said he loves going away because he can get on the bus with the players and have a drink and have a laugh and a crack. It just says everything about somebody who's got that passion for it. It's done for the love, not the money.
Indeed.
I think as well, the other thing I wanted to come across, Tim, was sort of players moving on from non-league into the higher regions. I just quickly want to mention two players I had myself during my career. Nick Pope, if I don't know where the listeners watched Burnley at the weekend when Heaton, the first team goalkeeper, went off injured. The goalkeeper came on, Nicky Pope, who then played in the 1-1 draw at Liverpool on Saturday. I actually had him on loan at Harrow Borough when he was a Charlton goalkeeper. And maybe about 5 years ago, good lad, and always not being clever after the event, but we always felt he had the potential to go to the top level. But there you go, from non-league to the Premier League in 5 years ain't bad. And then Ollie Hawkins, who we spoke about, I think Ollie's been on the show once or twice as well, but he's gone to Portsmouth, and he played at level five. I'm going to try and read these off. He played at level five with North Greenford, level four with Northwood, level three with me at Harrow, level two with Hemel Hempstead, level one with Dagenham, and he's now with Portsmouth. Were they Division One, Portsmouth?
League One, yes.
Yeah, league. So they're in League One, and I think he made it done League Two with Dagenham as well. That's off the top of my head. I might be wrong with one of them, but that's a real sort of. If you look at where he started to where he is now, it's a real success story.
And how many years has he done that in then, Dave? Is it 5 or 7 years?
Yes, yeah, it'd be around about that. Yeah, Harrow was about a similar time to Popey, so I'm going to guess seven years. Yeah, and he was another one. You always felt if the penny dropped with him, he had the ability to be whatever he wanted to be, and the penny has certainly dropped. So it's great to hear. Great to hear that sort of success coming out of non-league.
And there's still more to come, hopefully. Well,
absolutely.
Oh, yes.
So now to a new feature. We all love non-league and we all love to show off our knowledge of football to fans at higher levels. But other than your own league, perhaps your own division, what is your non-league knowledge really like? Well, we thought we'd bring in some experts of some of the lower leagues to fill us in on who to follow, who to watch, and what other leagues in the great English football pyramid is all about. So joining us on the line is great friend of the show and a long time though here, Mr. David Bauheimer, who is our, and I believe, the non-league papers expert on all things Essex Senior League. Good evening, David.
Good evening to you. Yes, well, I've been following the Essex Senior League for more than 10 years and seen some very, very good players move up to quite high levels. Most notably, young Mr. Gale, currently at Newcastle, who was leading scorer when he played for Stansted. And he still pays homage to his former club, the Airportmen, with his goal celebrations when he puts his arms out and acts like a plane coming in to land. He's probably been the biggest success in the last decade of the Essex Senior League. But there are some other very good players who have gone forward to make very good careers. Neil Harris played for Maldon Town when they were in the Essex Senior League, now the manager of Millwall. He came through, and there have been a few others as well. So there's certainly a history of players coming through. And it's something that clubs do actually tell youngsters coming into the club. Just because you've been dropped by a club, it doesn't mean when you come to the Essex Senior League you don't have the chance to go forward, because there are players at much higher levels than the Essex Senior League having come through the system. If you're good enough, you will get spotted eventually and you will be able to make a career of it.
Yeah, and it's step five. So, you know, there's with restructuring and everything else that's going on the season ahead, there's a lot of decent size at step five, and particularly in the Essex Senior League. But is it Essex only, the clubs that are involved in the Essex Senior League, David?
No, it's not, because it's also North East London. In fact, probably almost half, not quite half of the clubs are based in North East London. There are two teams that play at Waltham Forest. Hackney Wick and Clapton share the old Spotted Dog. Ilford and Barkingside share the ground at Ilford at Cricklefield. There's Redbridge, who play at Oakside by Barkingside Station. So these are all London clubs. There are two teams that play at Mile End Stadium as well. Tower Hamlets and Sporting Bengal United. So quite a lot of London clubs. Enfield 1893 have moved out to Harlow, and Woodford Town are now playing at Gough's Oak, but they were all based in London as well.
Yeah, and what are attendances like at this level then, David? Because obviously you're mentioning a few stations there, so it sounds like it's fairly easy to get around and get to some of these places.
Well, yes. We're getting into political issues, unfortunately, when we talk about Clapton, whose ultras, when they turn up to away games, can take anything up to 650 fans, which for Step 5 is just absolutely crazy. And they make for a fantastic atmosphere wherever they go. On the opening day of the season, they turned up at Basel and there were 260-odd people there, and there was a really good atmosphere and there was some serious banter between the fans. But when there's a problem at Clapton, and there have been far too many times, they're boycotts, and then suddenly the crowds are back down to the 30s and 40s. Most clubs get just under 100 for a crowd, or between 60 and 100 for a crowd. Two or three get much lower, but the crowds are reasonably good. And the fans are all very dedicated, and they love their football.
Mm. Well, my own side, I think you saw one of the ties faced FC Romania twice this week in the FA Cup. And only just about scraped through. You know, there's lots of people impressed with the quality and the commitment. Is it make it a hard league to get out of then?
It is a hard league to come out of, but some teams have had great success. Concord Rangers being probably the best example of that. They went from the Essex Senior League to what's now the National League South within five seasons. And other clubs have come up and gone up a couple of levels, and they haven't all been able to sustain that rise, but they've certainly got up as far as Ryman and Premier East Thurrock, another team from Essex who got into the National League South.
Doing very well at the moment as well.
Yeah, and you've got Haringey Borough, who won the league a couple of years, who had a fantastic result in the FA Cup last weekend. There are another team who've come through, Bowers and Pitsy. You get some very, very tough teams coming out of the league, and they've had some success.
And what about yourself then, David? Because we know that you've been involved with a non-league show since day one, pretty much. Where do you normally get about? Where can you normally be bumped into on a Saturday match day nowadays?
Well, I'm still the press officer at Hendon FC, and I'm at pretty much every home game. Some of the away games are much harder for me to get to nowadays. And if I'm not there, I'll be watching some sport somewhere. I volunteer at hospital radio, so there are times when, for the hospital, I will go to a game other than in the Essex Senior League if I'm not at Hendon. But last night I was at Waltham Forest to see them beat Hackney Wick 2-1. On Saturday, I was at Waltham Forest to see them lose to Sporting Bengal United to a 95th-minute goal in an absolute ripstormer of a game. And then the following day, I was watching your boys struggle and very nearly go out of the FA Cup.
We like a few late.
FC Romania.
Yeah, we like a few late goals at our club at the moment this season. You can't leave early. You can't leave early. Well, thank you very much.
You certainly can't.
Thank you very much for your time again, David. Hopefully, this is going to be a new feature where we have a look at some of those clubs and leagues that are slightly below the main levels that get focused on, and look out for some names that are becoming through maybe in the coming seasons. You've already given us a couple of names that have already gone through and gone on to great success. But it's great to talk to you again, and hopefully we'll catch up with you again very soon. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. All the best to you. Good luck.
Gentlemen, Essex Senior League, any knowledge?
All I can say is that I can vouch for the club and Ultras because I went there one rainy night when I was at Harborough for a London Senior Cup game, I think it was, and it was one of them trips as a manager that you're struggling to motivate yourself for, if I'm totally honest. and was stunned, because if you know the... What's the ground called? A spotted dog, is it?
Yeah.
Like, and I'd been there 30 years ago with sort of Southall and North Greenford, and it hadn't changed a bit. It looked as if it hadn't had a lick of paint since. Run down, sad looking place, if I'm being honest. And then this support turns up, and it's the hundreds. It was hundreds were like having a beer, they'd singing all night. they were unbelievable. I had a chat with a few of them after it about it, and sort of supported their cause a couple of times on Twitter and on the show, Tim, as you know, because of the rows they've sort of had with the owners. So that, and obviously Concord Rangers have come up against it a lot of times as well.
It's interesting though, isn't it? Because it must be difficult as a manager to try and get players to drop down to that level. It doesn't get the coverage even that non-league does. You know, we try and feature Step 5 if we can and below every now and then as much as possible. But as a player, it must be sometimes difficult to motivate yourself particularly if you dropped out of a higher level, but as a manager to try and get those players all gelling together, and also when they're playing at that level, that they're going to have defects in some respect. Just that's why they haven't quite made it at the next level up. But as you say,
to be fair, Tim, sorry to interrupt you, but yeah. Players in the conference have got defects.
Players in the Premier League make the headlines because they've got defects. So
Step 5, of course they have. And you go into that environment where you're not offering them money. And in many ways, and I've spoke to managers of that level and not just on one occasion, and they talk to you asking how difficult it is to manage in the Raymond Premier or the Conference South or the National South as it's called now, and really their job's harder. Their job's harder to get people to train in, to get people to play, to get people to be disciplined, because all you can offer them is a pint of lager after the game if you can afford it. But in many ways, you then get a bond that has gone out of football at a higher level now, that sort of, I don't want to say Sunday morning bond, but that, where you're all mates and you're all in it together.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the sides that have been successful. I mean, even Danny Cowley's side at Lincoln last year, it was the dressing room that held them all together, wasn't it, and pulled them through.
Yes.
Literally, he brought them together one season and then they went on immediately to success. And it's got to be that mentality that you see far more. As I say, the reports that I've heard of the FC Romania players and their commitment to the game, it makes some of the performances I've seen at higher levels in recent seasons slightly embarrassing, where people are just, trotting out and maybe not giving their all. It's an interesting thing, and I think, as non-league fans, we probably the clubs probably deserve a bit more support from us every now and then. So if your club's not got a game or an away game that you can't get to, try and have a look at your local Step 5, Step 6, Step 7 sides and give them the support of all the non-league fans.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think this is a good feature from us to promote that. And the other thing now is social media. So they get more exposure now than they maybe did 25 years ago because of all the social media outlets. But there's good players that'll come out. And what I was going to ask David is, I'm sure that if he sees a good one, he's straight on to Gary McCann ending about him. So that's a good little sort of scout for Gary McCann to have.
Time's got the better of us. We've got to stop certainly stop talking like this. thanks to Dave, Swampy, all our guests and everybody for listening.
Well, I would also like to say to the listeners that we haven't locked Caroline Barker in a room and we're not holding her hostage anywhere, Tim, are we?
We're not. She's just literally just sent me a text, actually. Hopefully.
Are you three still talking? She's just text.
Yeah. She thought we were recording this morning and she still thinks we're still talking, yeah. So remember, you can find us throughout the season on Audio Boom, on iTunes, Stitcher and TuneIn Radio. And if you want to put the podcast on your own website, check out our website, nonleagueshow.com, where you can grab an embeddable player for free. We'll be back next week. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
JIBBA JABBA.